Welcome to PM Lessons Learned, a podcast for project managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Increase your PM knowledge, build business relationships, increase your effectiveness, increase your marketability, gain professional support. Join our group and take part in our conference calls. Details at pmlessonslearned.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Henry Will, and welcome to another pmlessonslearned.com conference call. This is a conference call, our PMP exam study group subgroup, and we're happy that you joined us. Today is March the 5th, 2009. We have a great echo on the line, and this will be podcast number 59. Before I get started, a very important announcement. Our PMP exam study group is looking to reorganize in a new way. What this might affect is all those that listen in to the podcast, because we're talking about moving to a format which would be a weekly study group format where people who want to really seriously study for the PMP exam would be involved in a weekly conference call. We don't know when it would occur. Of course, the members would get to decide that. And that call then would be for people that are interested in participating and presenting topics. We'll cover more of this at the end of the call because I don't want to delay with our presentation this evening. Thank you very much for joining. And David, thank you for your leadership of this call over the years. David, take it away.
All right, Henry, I'm going to keep it brief and turn it over to Dana right away. We got a good presentation lined up in Human Resources. So Dana has been doing a couple calls for us. We really appreciate his volunteer efforts. It's great to have somebody presenting for us, and he's been doing a great job. So with that, let me introduce Dana.
All right, thank you very much. Let's go through. Hopefully everyone has been able to pull the PDF file for the presentation from the Yahoo group area. It is at the top level for conference call material. If you haven't been there yet, go grab that. I'll let you know when I move the slides along. And we'll start off by welcoming you to the PMP study group, PMP Lessons Learned study group. This is one of three separate calls that are handled every month. On the third Thursday of the month, there's a Lessons Learned call, and then on the first Thursday of the month we have the study group, and then on the second Thursday of the month we have a job shop. So look at the pmlessonslearned.com website to find the schedule of what's being talked about on any of the particular calls, and you see the URL is www.pmlessonslearned.com. Also join the Yahoo group, PM Lessons Learned, for all the past presentations and things along those lines, and look at the bulletin board service as well. I'm going to move on to the next slide, and by doing that, we'll talk about call norms. This is an interactive call, so although you're all star sixed right now, if you want to ask a question, I do not mind being interrupted at all. So please, if you want to ask a question, do a quick star six. Interrupt me. Go ahead and do that. I'll ask a question. I'll do my best to answer it. David will chime in as he feels that he wants to as well, because we have a lot of good expertise here. We want to take advantage of that fact. And then when you're done asking your question, do yet another star six and remute your phone so that we don't see too many or don't hear too much background noise. All right. Moving on to the next slide. Here's the email address that David mentioned earlier. If you have any suggestions, do you want to sign up for the potential new weekly PMP study group, here's the address to use to express your interest. Obviously, we need a decent amount of interest from participants to make this happen. And the more people we have, the better. So please take the time to send some mail off to this email address, pmpstudy@pmlessonslearned.com, to express your interest. And then there's a bit of legalese. What I'm going to be presenting for the next hour or so is a bunch of material that is actually from a PMP project management study guide. This is put out by on the Spybeck series by John Wiley and Sons, authored by Kim Heldman. You will see the ISBN number there on the slide, and I'm using this with permission of the publisher because I am a registered instructor for this particular publisher. And I'll move on to the next slide and say welcome to the PMP Lessons Learned Study Group. This is, as Henry mentioned, March 5th, 2009. We're going to be talking about version 3 of the PMBOK today. We are centered on version 3. My name is Dana Safford. I work for Hewlett-Packard. I've been working for Hewlett-Packard for almost 40 years now. Been a PMP since 2004. I'm also an MBA, a Microsoft Certified Systems Engineer, and I'm ITIL Foundation Certified. And what I'll be doing is spending the next hour or so going through the human resource management side of the PMBOK. So I'm going to move to the first.
Dana?
Yes, sir.
This is David. I just wanted to mention, because I found something very interesting this week on the PMI site. PMI now has a online library that you can go and you can access a lot of quality books there, and Kim Heldman's book is actually one that you can access online via the PMI site. So if you're a PMI member, you can actually log in with your ID, PMI, your ID, and access that library, online library, and review Kim Heldman's book right there online. So you can't download it or anything, but I found that to be a very helpful for some people that haven't been able to buy the book or find the book.
Absolutely, absolutely. I believe that's books 24/7, if I'm correct, have there.
Yep.
Great. And for those who actually want to shell out the money to buy the book, this is one of the books that has a complete test engine in it as well, as so you can, it'll give you practice tests, it'll give you flashcards. It's a complete study kit, if you will, which is why I like it, and I've centered on that for all the study groups that I've run over the years. So let's carry on. We are on slide 6 right now. We're looking at the human resource management figure. This is figure 9-1 on page 201 of the PMBOK. We'll be talking about all four of these areas tonight. And I'm going to move on to the next slide. And we see the flows involved in that. We see that once we get through our enterprise environmental factors and our OPAs in the upper left-hand corner of the slide, which you'll see on pretty much every single knowledge area there is, because there's a lot of environmental organizational things and a lot of organizational assets, process assets as far as checklists and things like that, that you can take advantage of in your own organization, because one of the main things that the PMI likes to foster is you help the people who are coming behind you. So doing whatever you can to provide checklists and things like that is a good thing. And then once we finish off with human resource planning, we drop right straight down into all four of the processes, one right after another, without a whole lot of other interaction going on until the very end, and then there's more interaction there, and you'll be able to see all of that as you work through the PMBOK. So I'm moving on to the next slide, and we see that we're talking about human resource planning. This is process number 9.1. It's also figure 9-3 on page 203 of the PMBOK. And there's a few things here as far as inputs and such, and we'll talk about some of those in a moment. So I'm going to move on to the next slide to talk about the inputs. As I mentioned, we have organizational factors and technical factors and human and interface factors, interpersonal factors. These are all the things that provide you with the wherewithal that you need in order to manage other people, in order to work with other people. So these are definite inputs to the whole managing human relations process, location and logistics, and even politics. As politics is difficult everywhere. It doesn't matter where you work. There's always politics, and all these things are very strong inputs to human resource planning. As you'll see a lot of words on these slides, and I'm going to touch briefly on the top of these things. I intend for you to use this presentation as yet another study aid, so I'm going to spend just a few minutes on each slide, and you get to read through the rest of the words as you do your actual studying. So I'm moving on to the next slide, slide 10, and we're talking about a new, different set of triple constraints. Everyone probably is aware of the normal triple constraints, scope, cost, and schedule, but there's other types of triple constraints as well. There are some triple constraints for the enterprise environmental factors, and those main triple constraints are whatever organizational structure you happen to be working under. There's also collective bargaining agreements if you're working in a union shop or someplace that has unions as part of your workforce, you have to pay attention to. And then then there's the economic conditions. And with things going on here in March of 2009, how can you not pay attention to economic conditions and what's going on? So just be aware that this is a triple constraint that may show up, a new type of triple constraint that may show up on the test. So whenever you see one of those big red dots up in the upper left, like you see in the upper left-hand corner here, those are something that you could potentially see on the test. So pay close attention to those. And moving on to the next slide, as we talk about organizational process assets, those are all the checklists and templates and anything, spreadsheets, SharePoints, things along those lines, file shares that might be available to you both in your work. And you could also say that the PM Lessons Learned Yahoo Group file share is yet another OPA that you can use in order to perform your project management job. So any place that has those type of things that you can download and use to help you out is a very strong OPA. Moving on to the next slide, we know there's a bunch of tools and techniques that we'll be paying attention to. There's many different types of charts. There are hierarchical charts you see on the left, and then a mixed matrix chart in the middle, and a text-oriented chart on the right-hand side there. They have each has their strengths, each has their weaknesses. You get to choose what type you like to use as you're working through your project, and you could see any of these on the test. As far as human resource planning goes on the next slide, we need to be able to make sure that we can document the roles and responsibilities, because we want to make sure it's very clear for everybody involved in your project exactly what their role is, what their responsibilities are, and what everybody else is as well, so that there's no confusion. Once there's confusion, there's cause for conflict. We want to try to minimize conflict. And then once we know what those are, we can use that to create and document a staffing management plan. And we'll talk about staffing management plans in a little bit. Moving on to the next slide, as we talk about roles and responsibilities, we begin to see some of the things, more of the tools that you can use. One of those is a RASI chart, and that is a form of responsibility assignment matrix, or a RAM chart. It is used to illustrate the connections between the work that you're going to be doing that will be done for your project and who's going to do that work. And that can be done from an individual name point of view, as you see on this chart here, or it could be the programmers, or the database administrators, or the bulldozer operators, or the carpenters, or the surveyors. You could do a class of individual as well, either a named individual or a class of individual, depending upon how large your project is. And this chart we see below here, as I mentioned, is called the RASI chart. It's called RASI because you see the letters in that yellow box in the middle of the slide, where R is represents someone who is responsible for performing the work. An A in that chart is someone who is accountable for producing the deliverable of the work package and signs off on the work, not to do it, but to develop what has to be done within that particular activity. C is a consult, someone who has input to what's going on, and an I is someone who must be informed of what is going on. So the way you build this chart is just come up with a matrix, put the activity in the left-hand column, whatever it happens to be. This example, which is figure 9-5 on page 206 of the PMBOK, if you have your PMBOK handy. It's just a very high-level design, define, develop, and test, and they've chosen to use a person's name, but as I mentioned, you could use a group or a department or a classification, a skill level or something along those lines. And then what you do is for each one of the activities, you fill in what that person's role is for that activity. So that's why you see the smattering, if you will, of R's, A's, C's, and I's to form the RASI chart. And then that's all it is. And then you can use that to help people understand what it is, what their role is, and what their responsibilities are. Moving on to the next slide. Now we see a different kind of chart. This is a linear responsibility chart. It has all the same information as the RASI chart does, but it uses graphics instead of letters. So if you're a more graphical kind of person, you can use this and work through your assignments and your managing of your individuals. Moving on to the next slide, we're on slide 16 right now. We talk about some other tools and techniques such as networking. There's always interaction going on between people in the organization, be it formal, be it informal, but there's always interpersonal things going on and political things going on. You need to understand for your organization how to do things. Some organizations are very highly structured, very political, while others not so much. So you need to pay attention to what is important in your organization and follow through with the appropriate type of networking. Organizational theory is something that you should pay attention to as well. This gives you your structure as far as who reports to whom. Is it a strong matrix? Is it a weak matrix? Is it a functional organization? All those types of things that are in other parts of the PMBOK that you have to pay attention to, and they play a strong role in the management of human resources because they all have their strengths and their weaknesses, and it really will significantly impact how you as the project manager would be able to do your job, with the ease of which you'd be able to do your job, depending on who your people work for. Moving on to the next slide, we look at the outputs. Basically, we have some more roles and responsibilities where you need to make sure that you've labeled everything. Make sure it's clearly labeled for everybody what their role is, what their authority is, if they have any authority at all, what their responsibilities are, what competency levels you need to have in order to do job A, whatever that happens to be. If you're a bulldozer operator, you obviously need to know how to run a bulldozer. If you're a surveyor, you need to know how to run a transit and such. If you're a programmer, you need to know language, PHP or back in my days, it was Fortran and COBOL, but whatever you need to know for your level of competency. And then, obviously, as things are put together, you'll find organization charts and staffing management plans and all those things that we just finished talking about. So I'm going to move on to the next slide and talk about what goes into a staffing management plan. In the left-hand column, you see the various things that can go into a plan. In the right-hand column, you see a description of what those are. Now, a staffing management plan will vary depending upon your project. If you have a very large project, perhaps you're going to have every single one of these lines in there. But if it's a small project, maybe not so much. Maybe you're just going to have a couple of paragraphs. So if it's a one- or two-person project, you might not need all this. Or a very small 10- or 15-person project, maybe not so much. But if you've got a several hundred or several thousand-person project going on, then you're going to have probably a binder with all your staffing management planning and going on in there. Moving on to the next slide. Here's another example of another tool that you can use. This is a staffing management resource histogram. This is something that project managers use to show how many individuals, how many resources are applied to the project at any given day, week, month, quarter. This happens to be a weekly one that you see here. This is actually figure 9-6 from page 208 of the PMBOK. And you can see that this particular project happened to staff up very quickly in January, comes to a rather steady state through February and March, and then drops off at the beginning of April, and then is really steady state in May, which is probably, maybe that's when the support portion of the project carries on. It's operating, something's operational, and you're just providing support for a month or something along those lines. So this is yet another type of chart that you can use. Moving on to the next slide. Now we're going to look at the next process, which is acquire the project team. This is process number 9.2, and you're looking at figure 9-7 on page 209 of the PMBOK, and I'm on page 20 of the slide presentation. So I'm going to move on to the next slide and begin to talk about some more of the inputs. We've already mentioned something about the EEFs and the OPAs, but just make sure that you understand which is which. And the exam point there is, even though the availability, experience levels, interest costs, and all those things of your resources are considered part of enterprise environmental factors, you also need to understand all of the importance that they play in the acquire project team process, because these are the things you're going to pay attention to as you try to pull people in. So a lot of times people think, well, it's just an input, I don't have to worry about it so much. Well, in this case, you really need to pay attention to these types of enterprise environmental factors, because they'll help you build your team, a strong team for that matter. And then under the OPAs, there may be in your company, in your division, in your industry, recruitment practices that you need to pay attention to. So to that extent, if there's policies you must pay attention to for hiring and releasing and things along those lines, you know what those are, so that you're not surprised when someone says, why didn't you follow process A or process X, whatever it happens to be. Moving on to the next slide, there are tools and techniques that we need to pay attention to. First is called pre-assignment. This is when, for some reason or another, when a project is planned out, certain individuals are assigned to the project already. This project cannot proceed without Dave Smith, whoever Dave Smith happens to be. He's obviously got some level of expertise that somebody in the organization feels is extremely important to this project. So as the project starts up, you as a project manager get to have Dave Smith on your team, because Dave is the person with whatever expertise you need to move forward. But most of the time, you're probably going to be negotiating with somebody, especially if you work in a functional organization. You're going to have to go talk to all those functional managers and say, I need four programmers. I need 12 carpenters. I need whatever you happen to need. You'll have to go negotiate with the line or the functional managers of these individuals for your resources. And, again, that's that organizational structure that was so important a few slides back, because it really impacts how much work you need to do in order to get your team members together. And then it's acquisition. This involves the actual hiring of individuals, if they have come in from the outside, or if there is an official process to actually bring them onto your team. Maybe there's a transfer that has to take place, or some special assignment process that has to be done. Whatever that is for your company, for your division, for your group, you need to follow those acquisition processes and make sure that everything is lined up correctly so that you can have the individuals that you'd like to have. Moving on to the next slide. And then there's virtual teams. The PMBOK doesn't make a whole lot of wherewithal with virtual teams in the current version 3. It does more in version 4, but I think the PMI is finally realizing that in this flat global society we live in, in this flat global business world, you don't have to be sitting in the next cube from another person who's working on the same project that you are. So virtual teams, if the PMBOK defines them as groups of people with a shared goal who fulfill their roles with little or no time spent meeting face-to-face, but it doesn't place a whole lot of stock in it for the current test. In the next test, it'll place a bit more stock on the virtual teams, and over time, we'll probably see that change because, I work at Hewlett-Packard, and there are people I've worked with for years and years that I've never met, and I talk to these people three or four times a week. Never met them. And probably never will meet them because I live in Massachusetts, they may live in California, but I work with a ton of people who are in Australia and in Switzerland and in Ireland and China and Singapore and Korea and all over the place. And I'm never going to meet these folks. A lot of folks in India as well. So virtual teams are a thing of the present, and the PMI will get there slowly. But you see all these different things that for the test you need to pay attention to as you work through a virtual team. As a project manager, you need to do a whole lot more communicating because you do not want to be the only person on the team who knows what everybody's doing. You really want to make sure that you communicate, you let everybody on your virtual team know what person A is doing, what person C is doing, whatever the case may be. Do a lot of communicating. You'll always hear that a project manager's 80% of a project manager's job is communicating. Well, this is one example where you really need to do that. So everybody on the team, the various little components of the team, know what everybody else is up to. And it really will help to make sure that everyone has a level playing field. And over time, they'll know each other from your communications and from dealing on conference calls or whatever you happen to be doing to get your teams together. Okay, moving on to the next slide. And now we're going to be talking about some outputs very, very quickly. There isn't a whole lot to say about these outputs, though they're just three big bullets on the slide here. You know you're going to do your staff assignments as your people come in. You know you're going to have to pay attention to the resource availability. How often am I going to have person A available to me? How many weeks are they available? Are they only available from January 1st to March 1st? Is that bulldozer that I need only available on Tuesdays or something along those lines? And as you know these things, you will update your staffing management plan to reflect these assignments and these resource availability needs. Or constraints is a better way to look at that. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next slide. I'm on slide 25 now, and I'm going to begin to talk about developing the project team. We're looking at develop project team, which is process 9.3. This is also figure 9-8 on page 212 of the PIM Book, and we'll be talking about a whole bunch of different tools and techniques in here. This one's going to take a little bit to get through. So I'm going to move on to the next slide and begin by saying this process is all about creating an open, encouraging environment for your team. As a project manager, you'd like to try to have as open or as well-known environment as you possibly can. People should know what's expected of them. People should know what they expect from their other team members. And if you're open and encouraging, you'll be able to make that happen and turn your team into an effective, functioning, coordinated group. And remember, projects are performed by individuals, and the better they work together, the better your life is going to be. So you need to make sure that as a project manager, you make things as tightly knit and as open and as efficient as possible. Okay, moving on to the next slide, there's a bunch of different ways to do that. So we start talking about things like team development and individual development. This is crucial to making sure your project is successful. You need to make sure everybody works well together, make sure they have the right development, the right training. You need to make sure that dependencies come up, all the dependencies are taken care of. And if you have to work with a functional management, some type of functional management to make sure the people have what they need, that you go ahead and do that. But also in the back end of a project, if you're starting to plan the ending of your project, then you probably want to make sure that your team members have some other place to go when your project is done. And to the extent that you do that and they see that you do that, then they're going to want to work for you again. So the next time you have a project that you're trying to staff, they'll want to work for you. So you've got a reputation now as someone who does what they say they're going to do, and that's important to a project manager because your reputation is everything. Moving on to the next slide, there's a bunch of different tools and techniques we'll be talking about. So I'm going to move on to the next slide and begin the talking about those. I'm on slide 29 right now. And the first is training. You need to, as a project manager, assess everyone on your team, see what their skills and their abilities are, and provide whatever training that is required to do a couple of things. If they need development in a certain area in order to be fully functional in your team, you try to get that training together. But if they are already fully functional for what you want them to do for your project, but you like them and you like what they do and you want to be able to use them in the future, then you can use training as a reward as well. If you know that in order to move to the next level of project that they want to do, they need class X, whatever it happens to be. They want to see a class in some level of some other programming language or something along those lines. Then as a reward for doing a good job, you could get them into that training. You could provide them with what they need in order to move on to the next level in their career, or the next process that they have to come across. And then that way you are endearing yourself to them and they'll want to work for you again as time moves on. So as you come up with the training development plans for each individual, you're going to take and you're going to add those to your staffing management plan and develop those into your full-fledged plan moving forward for this project and maybe other projects as well. Moving on to the next slide, there's also team-building things we have to pay attention to. And most of the time, or oftentimes, team members really don't know each other when they first walk into the first kickoff meeting, if you will, be that a face-to-face meeting or a virtual meeting of some conference call, video conference call, whatever it happens to be. They really may not know each other. They may not even be aware what the project is. They just know you're assigned to Project X, show up on this conference call, go into this conference room on Tuesday at 3 o'clock. And that's where you begin to meet people and begin the process of forming your team. So what we need to do, excuse me, is we need to resolve all these things and try to get the unfamiliarity gone as soon as possible. Make it disappear right away. So the project manager, you need to bring this team together as quickly as you can. Get it moving and marching in the same direction at the same time to the same tune. It's like herding cats sometimes in the beginning, and we'll talk about that in a couple of slides. But you need to provide them motivation, the reward, and the recognition to make sure that you keep your team in top shape. Moving on to the next slide. So there's team building techniques that you can begin to do to make that team become a close-knit group. You've all heard of team building exercises. I'm sure you've been involved in some of them throughout your career. It's basically getting a group, a diverse group of people to work together, get them to know each other, to trust each other a little bit more, and you can do a whole bunch of different things to make that happen. Provide lunches, things like that, exercises, things in meetings, extracurricular activities, whatever the case may be, to make that happen. The exam tends to focus more on the theories behind team building, though, and the characteristics of effective teams, not so much on what you need to do in order to build your team. So pay attention to the theory as you're studying. Moving on to the next slide. Now we get into some real meat here that will show up and not only on the test, but throughout your careers as project managers as well. There's a guy named Dr. Bruce Tuckman who put together this model of the four stages of team development. We're going to start in the lower right-hand corner of slide 32 here with the first phase, which is called forming. And in the forming phase, you've already had your kickoff meeting where the people walked into the room, came onto the conference call. Nobody knows each other. Everyone's looking around saying, why am I here? That type of thing. So everyone is out for themselves. They really don't know anybody. It's why am I here type of thing. So perhaps at the beginning of this stage, people are going to be very formal. They may be very reserved and maybe be very quiet for a while. Maybe take an all-business approach until they feel each other out. They're going to maybe over time understand the voices, or if it's face-to-face, the faces of the individuals on the team, and they're going to look at the characteristics of these teams, of these team members, and they're going to form opinions about these people. And that's all done in the forming stage. Then we move up into the upper right-hand quadrant to the storming stage. Phase number two. This is where things really begin to happen, because now people have sort of scoped each other out a little bit, and now they're going to start. Now the alpha dogs, if you will, are going to start getting confrontational. They're going to start vying for position. They want to be the de facto leader, or they want to be the de facto technical heavy, or whatever the case may be in this team. So, and other people are going to be doing it as well. So there's going to be some jockeying for position and storming as to see who's going to be on top, who's going to be the alpha male, who's going to be the beta male, that type of thing. Don't want to use the word male all the time, but the alpha dog, beta dog, and just jockey for position. And that will take some amount of time to work through. But eventually it will happen, and things will calm down. People will understand where they best fit. It's going to maybe take some help from your part. You have to pay attention to all this, and you have to interject. You have to guide. You have to cajole. You have to mentor people as they're going through the storming stage to make sure they understand where their role, what their role is, and where they fit in this project. And once you do that, you begin to slide over to the left, into the upper left-hand quadrant, into the third phase called norming. Now, here's where things start to calm down. People really begin to know each other. They feel comfortable with their positions, where they are on the team, who they're working with. They form bonds with certain individuals that they have to work closely with, perhaps. And things decisions are starting to be made jointly now. The team says, yeah, we can do this instead of I can do this. So that phase will carry on, and things will continue to get better until we reach down into the fourth stage, which is called performing in the lower left-hand quadrant. This is where great teams really perform, because everybody is fully comfortable with everything going on. They know what's required of them. They know what they have to do. They can anticipate what other people on the team are going to request, are going to need, and maybe we'll have it already done and say, oh, I know you're going to ask me for this. Here it is. And things like that to show that this is a mature team. They really perform well together, and they're just humming right along. And then as time goes on and the project disbands, they'll exit out. Okay, so those are the four stages of development. If there's any questions, please feel free to do a *6 to ask a question. I'll pause for a second, take a sip of water here, and if not, I'll move on. Okay, moving on to the next slide. Now, as we work through all these, there's a bunch of caveats with this whole process that I was that I began to talk about in the last slide, and that different teams move through this process at different rates. Some teams will take forever just to get through the forming stage, or forever just to get through the storming stage. You think they'll never come out of storming because of the personalities involved. So there's different rates going on. So don't think every team goes through at the same rate. Also, as a new, if you've got a performing team, no matter where you are in those four stages, when you bring a new person in to the team, you start at square one. You start back down in the forming stage. Now, hopefully, because the new person will see how things are going, you'll be able to work through the storming phases very quickly to get back into the performing stage. But again, time is going to vary, and it depends. But you always start the first square whenever a new team member comes in, and then. The last point down there is, according to Tuckman, leaders adapt their leadership style as the team develops through. So as I mentioned, in those early phases, you're going to take on a very direct style of leadership. You're going to say, you must do this, you must do that. And as you work through from the forming stage up to the storming stage, maybe you're still going to be doing that, but maybe not so much. And then as you get into the norming stage, you're going to be backing off now. Now you're just doing the mentoring thing. And then when you get down into the performing stage, you're probably just sitting back smiling and watching this team hum right along because you provided the right level of motivation, the right level of leadership, the style of leadership in the appropriate square, and guided your team along so that now they're just a well-oiled machine, and they're providing you with everything you need to do for your project. Okay, moving on to the next slide. And we're talking about team building a little bit more. There's a thing called team focus. So this is paramount that the team members know and understand the goals and objectives of the project. That's sort of like a duh kind of comment. You know, it's obvious that they need to pay attention to that. So you need to make sure you communicate. Get that team focus directly on the team, communicate to the team. They should understand where you're going and what work is ahead and how long it's going to take to get there. Because people are going to use their personal filters to see and hear what's going on. There's a whole section on the communication process. So when we talk about the communication knowledge area, communication is bidirectional, and everybody sees things through their own rose-colored glasses, through their own filters. And you have to be aware, as the sender, what those filters are on your receiving for the recipients of your messages. You have to pay attention to that type of thing and use solid communication skills to make sure you're moving forward with all of your communications. Moving on to the next slide, look at some effective team characteristics that you can have here, and you can see the list there. Once you have an effective team, if you have any conflict, it goes away right away. People understand that it's for the good of the project to resolve conflict very quickly, and they do it with very little mentoring or some small amount of direction. They're committed to the project, and they have high job satisfaction and all those things you see there because they have a sense of belonging and purpose so that this project will be successful. So those are the effective things to watch out for. There's some negatives as well. On the next slide, we see what those are. You want to watch out for things, the don't-care attitudes, because someone is not very well motivated for whatever reason. Maybe this particular project isn't satisfying to them. It's something that they've done over and over again, and they want something new and different. Or the work is too difficult for them on the other side of things. They just can't seem to get it. You, as the project manager, have to figure out all these things and make sure that you've addressed these things. You don't want your status meetings to turn into whining sessions. And poor communication is one way that can happen. So, excuse me. So work on your communication skills. Work on these negatives to make sure that you understand what's going on, and make sure that your project team trusts you. As a project manager, you need their trust in order to move forward. Speaking of moving forward, I'm going to go to the next slide. So we need to make sure that everybody knows the ground rules. You set these up at the beginning of the project in the kickoff meeting, or in the very first few status meetings, or however, whatever type of meetings you happen to have. And they need to include what norms you're going to have, what reporting issues you might see, or reports you need to do, communication things. You allow them to offer suggestions, things along those lines, and come up with anything else that you feel is important to your project. When you outline the ground rules ahead of time and everybody understands them, then things move a whole lot easier. You know, maybe someone doesn't like a ground rule, that's a different issue, but at least they're out there, they can see that they're there, and you work through the individual knot holes, if you will, as they come up. Moving on to the next slide. Co-location. Back to co-location and virtual teams. The PMI and the PMBOK make a huge deal out of having people be co-located, as I mentioned earlier. And co-location obviously means that everyone is in the same proximity. Maybe if not in the same set of cubes, maybe they're in the same building, the same campus, the same city, whatever the case may be. But they're not too far apart from each other, so that if they must get together, they can get together. And if you have a large project with a big budget, maybe if you have a diverse team with people in other parts of the world, the country, whatever, maybe you can have some money in the budget to have some type of regular group meeting where face-to-face meeting is involved, so everybody understands who's who. So for the test, if you're given a choice between having a co-located team or a virtual team, you're going to want a co-located team. No question about it. The answer to that question should be the team should be co-located. Because that's what the PMI wants to see. When you're answering questions on the test, you must answer the way the PMI wants you to answer the question, not the way you think it should be answered from an ethical point of view, a business point of view, or something along those lines, depending upon your set of circumstances. The answers always have to be from the PMI's point of view. Right, so as we work through things, well, a lot of our teams are not co-located, so you will find that you're using other things, and there's whole other presentations, some of which have occurred here on the third Thursday of the month with the PM Lessons Learned conference call, managing projects from over diverse groups or over long ranges from home offices, things along those lines. There's a whole set of tools and techniques that you can use and practices that you can use to make that happen. And they involve things like email and chat and instant messaging and conference calls, be they audio or video conference calls, because they're important because you cannot see the nonverbal communication that is happening. You cannot see the body language if you're on a conference call like we are right now. So you have to go by tone of voice. And once you know how to do that, you can tell when somebody's upset. You can tell when somebody's a bit peeved. They become condescending or whatever the case may be. You can tell that in people's voices once you know the individual. So you look for those same nonverbal communications, but you're doing it verbally now, because that's what you have to do. And so just be aware that co-location is a big deal for the PMI. Moving on to the next slide. And then there's motivations. You have to motivate the teams. There's ways to do that with reward and recognition. There's ways to formally do it, to informally do it. You can also kill morale by doing too much of that, because if you reward the same individual over and over and over again, and you don't spread the wealth, if you will, then you're going to wind up with some motivational things you have to pay attention to. So try to the greatest extent possible over the course of your project, reward everybody in some way, shape, or form. And it can be cheap. There's a book out there, 1,001 ways to reward a team for less than $10. I met the author a couple of years ago at a project management symposium, and he comes up with a whole lot of good ideas on how to reward your team for less than $10. And that's 1,001 ways to do that. So look up that title. That might even be in the book's 24/7 thing that David talked about earlier. So pay attention to what people like to do. Some people are quiet. They don't want to be rewarded publicly at all. You have to pay attention to that, because you don't want to demotivate them by doing public rewards. You want to maybe do those rewards quietly so that you don't upset the apple cart, if you will. And understand the theories of motivation that are out there. As a project manager, you have to be aware of all the theories that are out there. so that, you know, for two reasons. One, so that you can motivate your teams and make sure your teams are forming correctly. But number two, as we move to the next slide, because they're on the test. And they're a big part of the test, so you have to pay attention to these. There are a whole bunch of different theories that we'll be talking about now for a little bit of team motivation. And these are all going to be on the test, guaranteed. And the extent they'll be on there will depend upon which test you happen to receive that day. But there are things like Maslow, Herzberg, expectancy theory, and achievement theory that we'll talk about right now. So moving on to the next slide, we're on slide 41. You've all seen, I'm sure, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So I'm not going to spend too much time on this other than to say that you start at the bottom of the pyramid with the physiological things like breathing, food, water, sex, sleep, things along those lines. And as you get most of those things at the lower level filled, not all, but most of the lower level, you get to move up a level. So once you're warm and dry and sated, maybe now you're going to look for some safety. And once you're safe, maybe now you're going to look for some friendship and family and keep on moving up the line. All right? But the point is you cannot reach a higher level until most of those lower level needs are satisfied. And you'll certainly see that in practice as you work through things. And you probably see it on the exam as well. Moving on to the next slide. Herzberg has a couple of things going on here. First, we have the hygiene theory, which is also called the motivation hygiene theory. And this postulates two different factors that you'll see on the test. One, there are things called hygiene factors. These are work environment issues, and these things prevent dissatisfaction to the extent of pay and benefits and conditions. You know, but the type of cube you live in when you're in your work, you're in a fancy cube, or you down in the basement sharing one room with 10 people. Those types of things. Those prevent dissatisfaction. So need to make sure that those are in very good shape to prevent that dissatisfaction. Pay is considered a hygiene factor because over the long term, pay is not really a motivator for most people. You know, you may argue with that, but that was Herzberg's point of view. And being paid for the work, prevents dissatisfaction, but it doesn't necessarily bring satisfaction itself. Because if you are highly motivated in reaching that self-actualization thing that's on the top of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, money may not be an object for you anymore. It's getting the job done. It's aspiring to achieve something you've not achieved before. That's the motivator, and the other factors not so much. And the bottom point there, motivators deal with the substance of the work itself and the satisfaction that one derives from performing the functions of the job. So you get these motivators together, they're going to lead to satisfaction, and the ability to advance and learn new skills and all those things are all motivators. So that's Herzberg and the hygiene theory. Yes, sir.
One way with the hygiene factors, you know, when you talk about pay and that not being a motivator, it's really it's a dissatisfier, which you have mentioned there, and I think that's the main thing. It may not motivate you, but it keeps you from being dissatisfied.
Correct.
And I just really want to I think you have that on the slide, but I really want to point that out. I don't know if I remember seeing something about that, you know, mentioned or not. But
not a problem. Not a problem.
I like to think of it that way.
Very good point. Yep, always jump in there and re-cement something that I've said. Moving on to the next slide. Then there's the expectancy theory. And with this one, the expectation of a positive outcome drives the motivation. So people know, hey, I'm going to be successful in this. Excuse me, and that's what moves them forward. They know that if they do a good job and they get things done, that the rewards will come their way. And they'll behave in the ways to make that happen. Also note that this theory says the strength of the expectancy drives that behavior. So that they know that at the end of this project that they're going to reap this huge, huge reward, a new car, they'll get a promotion, something like that, probably more likely a promotion, something along those lines, then they're going to work for it. But to the extent, if you promise somebody a new car at the end of a project, and they know you're not going to give them a new car, then that's really not a motivator. They're going to blow you off is what they're going to do, because they know you're not going to give them a new car, send them to Hawaii, whatever the case may be. That's something that is beyond your scope, beyond your scale of what you can do. But perhaps recommending them for a promotion is something you can do. So you have to find out what motivates your team members, and then your ability to fulfill that expectation is what's going to drive them. And people also become what you expect of them. If you treat them well and you make them feel like they're providing valuable contributions, then you're going to have a highly performing team. But if you treat them like dirt and keep whipping them and yelling at them and all kinds of other things, whipping them figuratively, not literally, then you're going to get what you pay for, what you've sowed, if you will. And they're not going to be a high performing team. So make sure that you always promote that you expect high things of your team members, not low things of your team members. Moving on to the next slide. Then there's achievement theory. With achievement theory, people are motivated by the need for three things, and that's achievement, power, and affiliation. And you see them right there, and they're pretty straightforward. People want to make sure they're getting ahead. They want to make sure they have power over others of some way, shape, or form, and they want to make sure they're loved. They have one affiliation with something, a particular group, like the PM Lessons Learned group. We have a lot of affiliation here. And again, the strength of the team members' desire for each one of those things will drive their performance for the achievement theory. And hopefully all these things will be on your brain dump as you work through and study for the test. Now we're going to talk about leadership versus management and a bunch of different things that come into the line with leadership and management. First thing we'll be talking about in the next slide, slide 46, is the X theory and Y theory. This is put out by a guy named Douglas McGregor. He had two models that he put together to explain how managers deal with their team members. First is the theory X guy. This is the guy who believes that, or the person who believes that most people do not like the work they're doing. They'll try to steer clear of any work they can, and if possible, they'll do nothing. So you need to be on their backs all the time. You actually need that physical whip in your hand for the most part. They behave like dictators. They have rigid controls. Punch in by this time, punch out by that time, 10-minute breaks, all that stuff. Because they believe people are only motivated by punishment, only motivated by money or position or something else. They are the doomsayers, if you will. Then there's the theory of why people. These people believe that managers are interested believe that people are interested in performing their best. And the managers will provide them with what they need in order to perform. So these people will be supportive of their teams. They'll do everything they can for the team, try to give them good offices, good pay, good working conditions, give them a little leeway if a personal thing comes up, things along those lines, but be a nice person to work for as opposed to a dictator. These people believe that people are creative and committed to the project goals and will perform better if you give them the things that they need in order to do the job. And they can do the job with limited supervision. You don't have to be standing over them all the time. And speaking of brain dumps, as we've worked with these things with the other study groups that I've run, on your brain dump sheet, the way I like to try to remember these particular two theories is with smiley faces. So with this theory X and theory Y, the theory X smiley face is really a frown face. So you draw, instead of a smiley face, you draw a frown face, and you put X's in for the eyes. So that way you know that is a bad thing. The person's dead. They're not happy. So that's a bad manager. For theory Y, it's a smiley face with Y's for the eyes. And so you know that's a good person. And one of the study groups that I run, one of the female participants said, you know, I don't like your smiley face and sad face. I'm going to put a male for the X theory and draw a stick figure of a female for the Y theory. To me, that works better. So great, whatever works for you. So just do what you can to remember these theories and the other motivational things moving forward. So we'll move on forward to the next slide and talk about contingency theory. Contingency theory, I'll spit it out here. This is a combination of the theory of why behaviors and the hygiene theory. And that basically just says that people are motivated to achieve levels of competency, whatever that might be, and they will continue to be motivated by this even after reaching that level of competency. Why? Because they'll be looking forward to the next level. They'll keep on going. The contingency's there. Hey, I'm here. Now I'm going to go to the next level. And that's what contingency theory is all about. Moving on to the next slide, we talk about leadership versus management. And there's a difference, for sure. Leaders are about visions. They're about rallying people around the vision. They inspire. They provide the inspiration and the vision to move forward, and they have a knack for getting others to do what needs to be done. And they do that through a couple of different techniques. They use power. They have influential power over people, and they use that to their benefit in order to get them to do what they need them to do. And perhaps there's politics involved as well. To the extent in the organization where they happen to sit, there's political things there. So they use power and politics to move things forward. Where managers are generally task-oriented, down in the blue section down here. These are the people who do the planning and the controlling. They're the bean counters, the budget people, and they work the policies and procedures. They're more generalists when they have a broad base of planning and organizational skills, and they do what they can to satisfy the stakeholders' needs. The leaders, not so much. They provide the broad vision and then move on, where the managers are the people who get the work done. These are the people who possess the motivational skills and the ability to recognize and reward behavior and all the motivational stuff that we just spent the last half dozen slides going over. Moving on to the next slide. Then there's the power of leaders. And power is the ability to influence others to do what you want them to do. In some way, shape, or form. You can do that in a positive way or a negative way, and you need to make sure that you use that power to convince others to do what you want to do in a certain way, perhaps, if you really care. If you don't care, then as long as they get it done, that's fine. But the kind of power you use will depend upon your personality as a project manager, your personal values, and your company culture, and you might use several forms of power as you move along. So let's talk about types of power on the next slide. I'm on slide 50 now, and there's a few different types. There's reward or penalty power, which is pretty obvious, granting people pay incentives, bonuses, things along those lines, or withholding those same pay or bonuses if you don't like what people are doing. There's expert power, because you are the expert in something. You're the subject matter expert, and so people look up to you because you know how a certain thing works, whatever the case may be. There's formal or legitimate power. That's when the organization chart comes in handy. You know, someone who's four levels above you has more power over them than you do, for the most part. And then there's referent power. This is what you get from your subordinates in that performing team that we talked about quite a few slides back. You are the de facto leader, if you will, the ad hoc leader of your team, because you're a well-rounded individual, you're fair, you provide people with what they need or whatever, and the people have a great deal of respect. Your team members have a great deal of respect for what you are doing. So you can get power that way. And if you're the project manager and you have referent power, so much the better. But these are the types of power that you'll run into as you work through your projects. Moving on to the next slide. And now we're going to talk about the last process for the night. We're on slide 51. We were talking about the managed project team. This is process 9.4. This is figure 9-9 on page 215 of the PMBOK. And we're going to be talking about a bunch of the tools and techniques here. So I'm going to move on to the next slide and to some general things first. When we're managing the project team, we're concerned with tracking and reporting on the performance of the team and individuals within the team. We're going to be talking about performance appraisals and both developing them and conducting them. We'll talk about issues where we're soliciting feedback from other individuals to into other individuals, and we're looking at the behavior, what's going on, and trying to help people get their jobs done, provide them what they need, tell them where they're doing well, tell them where they're not doing so well and need to work on some things. And the PMBOK states that one of the outcomes of this is an update to the staffing management plan. So as you work through this management team, maybe you're going to move some things around. So be aware that you can update your staffing management plan in this phase as well, in this process as well, I should say. And staffing management plan updates are not listed as an output of this process, so that's why the exam point's there. You still can do updates to the staffing management plan in this process. Moving on to the next slide, we'll look at a couple of tools and techniques, and then we'll close down for the night. So let's move on to the next slide and see that the first set of tools and techniques we use is observation and conversation. You want to be able to look at what your people are doing to the extent you can walk up and stand in their office or stand down the hall and watch them or look in a chat room if they're conversing in a chat room and providing good guidance to junior team members or something along those lines or providing what's required to keep the team going. That's what you want to do. And you talk to the individual as well to get their ideas and see what's going on, see where their head is at on various things. So observation and conversation is a big deal. You also want to keep an issue log as you're going through things so that if there's an issue you have to work with it with individuals, that you pay attention to that, you write it down, you pay attention to it, especially if there's negative things going on. You need to document so that if for some reason you have to release somebody, you've worked through all whatever the processes you have in your OPAs for releasing someone for poor performance or something along those lines, everything is documented and you can follow through. So make sure that you note the issues you've dealt with and what happened to them and when as you work through that. Moving on to the next slide. Then we're going to be doing a performance appraisal at some point in time, and it can be or for the overall project. It can be for a particular piece of the project or for that individual. These are individual performance appraisals, not project, not how well the project is doing, but how well the individuals and a team is doing for the project. So you pay attention to those, and you'll do them on whatever schedule your division, your group, your company likes to see. Some are quarterly, some are semi-annually, some are annually, some are beyond annually. They're biannually, things along those lines. But you need to do these performance appraisals. There's an exam point on here you should pay attention to. PMI likes a thing called a 360-degree review. You may call it something different in your company. It's when you ask individuals on the team, peers of the person you're reviewing, for review inputs. Is basically what it means. And you can choose to incorporate those into the appraisal, and depending upon whatever the standards in your organization are or your own personal standards. When I do them, if I see a positive comment, I might put the individual's name who provided the input, because a lot of people like to know. If someone said that nice thing about me, I'd like to know who that is. Negative ones, I might not do it so much. I might withhold the name of the negative one. But if someone's doing providing a negative input, hopefully I already know about it, and I'm not surprised by negative inputs coming from peers or from partners or collaborators outside the organization. Okay, but beware also of loyalty issues. Person A might be bolstering person B. They might have a mutual admiration society going. They may both not be doing very well, but they're both going to say, hey, person A is great, person B is great. So be aware of those ties as you're doing your performance review. So if you receive inputs, you can discount them as necessary. All right, moving on to the next slide. We have conflict management. As we work through things, conflict is going to arise inevitably from time to time. And there's whole theories about ways to deal with conflict management that is available in another knowledge area. But for this knowledge area, we're basically going to say that you should deal with it as soon as it comes up. Don't let it fester. Deal with it immediately. If you are during this process, most conflicts come up because of schedule issues. But things can also be done. Conflict can come from technical issues, from a variety of other things, management issues, external issues. It doesn't just have to be schedule. But since managed project team is toward the back end of things, it's mostly schedule because your project will already be scoped out and there may not be as many technical issues going along. But pay attention to all issues. Deal with things right away as soon as you possibly can. If you have to try to deal with them in private, if it's a one-on-one thing, try not to drag it into a team meeting if you can avoid it. Work in a direct and collaborative manner, but make sure you have things correctly documented so that, or if there's a formalized procedure you have to follow, you're following things correctly. If there's conflict between two team members, try to get them to work it out if you possibly can. Talk with them individually. Say, you need to work with person A in order to work this out. Do what you can, because I don't want to have to be involved in it, but I will if I have to. So try to work it out as best you can. And if you have to dictate what's going on, then so be it. You'll wind up dictating it. And the final slide for the evening, the output we have for managing project teams is whatever assets on your OPAs you can update, whatever updates you have. You might have developed a checklist. You might have developed a performance appraisal form. You might have developed something else that would be good for someone else who's coming along behind you. So when you do something like that, stick that in your OPAs, whatever that is, the file share, the SharePoint, the file cabinet, whatever it happens to be. Don't keep these to yourself, because you folks are bright. You folks are smart. You come up with these types of things, and you can share them, because there's no sense in making people reinvent the wheel. And to the greatest extent possible, share all these types of things. You see what they consist of, and do what you can to help the people that are coming along with either beside you or behind you. And with that, I'm going to close down for the evening. I'll ask if there are any questions at all, as if for anything I've gone over. I'm not hearing anything. So, David, back at you. Oh, there's a question. The answer is roo-roo.
Thanks, Dana. I had to take my phone off mute.
Mm-hmm.
We'll open up to general questions completely here. So does anybody have any questions at all about the group? Or?
David, this is Henry. If nobody does have any questions, I would like to give a recap of what we're thinking about moving to.
We got over a dozen people on the call, so I'm kind of surprised we're not getting any questions at all.
I was that clear. I'm amazed.
Yeah. This is Joe DeLuz. I missed the beginning. Harry, I'll give you a call about what we discussed.
All right. Yeah. The best thing to do is perhaps if you're looking for the presentation, go to the Yahoo group, download the presentation for tonight, and you'll grab all the slides, and we're going to hear about some of the other things in a moment, I think.
Yeah, actually, you can go to the website pmlessonslearned.com. On the left hand side is a link that says presentations and files. You follow that, and it gives you the directions. But I know that Joe is one of the people that I talked to about possibility of being one of the leaders if we move to a weekly meeting of this group. So let me explain that, since there are some people that are interested, and probably the people listening into the podcast want to know what we're talking about. And, of course, we want your feedback on this. But what David and I are talking about doing is moving this group to a weekly PMP exam study group. Probably we would not continue to podcast the calls, because the idea of having a weekly group was for people to be participating on a regular basis. It's important to have people participating and presenting. We're not really getting that with the monthly group. We're not getting the frequency that we feel would be necessary for people studying for the PMP. So by moving to a weekly group, there'd be a higher frequency of being able to study these topics. There'd, of course, be the momentum that would come from having a weekly meeting, having people involved in that. And then also we would require that people that would join that weekly group, that would probably be a closed group, and it would be only to those people that were serious about studying for the PMP exam and that would be willing to present when their turn came up, that we would just work through the group. And after we got all the way through the group, we'd start back at the beginning and everybody would have a turn to present on one of the topics. So we actually need two people to volunteer for this. These people, we don't have an exact term for them, but the volunteers would be, you know, something like PMP exam study group program managers, because they would be managing this program. And they would do things like schedule the calls and set up the schedule and notify people when it's their turn and set up the access for new people coming into the group and remove people when they leave, all that type of logistics. And, of course, we can give some guidance for that. David and I have some ideas and some things we've documented to give for guidance. The idea would be that these volunteers, too, could take advantage of a new program that we're starting with in pmlessonslearned.com that grew out of the idea that we wanted to do something for mentoring. We're talking about doing an OJT, on-job training program, for our volunteers. So somebody that would take on a program management job like this would hopefully be mentored in project management processes by one of our mentors. We have a few people in mind to do that. They would get together with you and mentor you through the program, through the project management processes, so that you could learn them, have that experience on your resume if you'd like, because a lot of project managers, after they get the PMP, they say, well, how can I get the experience? This would be a way to do it through our volunteer group. They'd be taken through these things that Dana just talked about, which I love all the things he talked about. All the human resource stuff is like one of the things that I love to hear about in project management, all the stuff about forming and storming, all those things. And these would be things that somebody would take you through if you volunteered for this position. That's our hope. And we need two volunteers to do that because we want to have consistency and continuity with the group. And if we have two leaders, then what will happen is that as one person gets their PMP and
transfers to another person. When one person gets it.
What's that?
When the person gets his PMP, not if.
Say
when.
No, we don't want to say we have. We have to say when here. We have to have positive thinking, Henry.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes,
okay.
When they get their
PMP. Yeah, we'll keep you in the center, Henry.
Keep you honest, yes.
So you guys keep me honest. But the idea is once somebody gets their PMP, they would hand it over and transition it to another person. And by having two people, those transitions would be taking place hopefully at different times. And therefore, there would be more continuity and that type of thing. And, of course, the other person of the two leaders would be able to help train and transition the new person that was coming on board. So we need people to volunteer to be these leaders. And we need people to volunteer to be part of the group. David?
Yes, I just want to say, you know, that this system has worked really well with our physical study group that we have working out of the Parsippany Library in New Jersey. That group has been going on for 2.5 years now, and we've probably had dozens of people that's gotten their PMP
right.
certifications from that group, and that's exactly how it's been working. You know, it just seems, you know, natural leaders, you know, form within the group, so it just keeps on going. People that get their PMP drops out, and new people come on board all the time with that group. So I think we can do that basically the same way with the virtual group.
Right. Yeah, and one of the ideas too, David, the reason why you and I have been thinking along these lines is because we've had so many people contacting us about wanting to be part of a local PMP exam study group, because getting together with a bunch of people to study on a weekly basis has a lot of value in it. And when people take the turn to do the presentation, they have to learn the material really well to do the presentation. Of course, they have enough leeway so that they have time to do that. But we're finding that there's so many people inquiring about having a PMP exam study group, and we can't always connect them to people in their area. You know, like David said, there's one in Parsippany, New Jersey that he started. Well, not everybody lives close to that. So what our vision has been to turn this into a virtual group. Of course, like David mentioned earlier on, before we started the recording, we would have a Yahoo group set up specifically for that these two program managers would take care of managing that group. And this would be part of PMLessonsLearned.com. And we could, of course, use the PMLessonsLearned.com logo and the people that are involved in that to guide people into this group. And this group would meet on a weekly basis. But the idea of why we wouldn't be podcasting it anymore is because if we continued to podcast it, then there would be people just listening in, and they're just not going to learn as much from that. The people that join this group would be people that would be interested in presenting so that they could learn the topics. Of course, they'd be able to leverage all of those slides that we have on every chapter of the PMBOK that we've continued to refine over the past, say, 2 years almost now that we've been doing this call. So these are our thoughts. We want to get feedback from the people listening to the podcast. We want to get feedback from those that call in from week to week. We need volunteers, and we need people to be interested in being part of this group and making the commitment. So we'll be looking forward to your feedback. You can give us your feedback through the email address. I'm sorry.
Henry, PMP study.
PMP study, Henry.
PMP study at PMLessonsLearned.com. Gee whiz.
Yeah.
It's been a long day. David knows I was up until 1:30 last night working on PM Lessons Learned. So, Yeah, it's
PMPstudy@PMLessonsLearned.com. And Henry, let me. I just really want to emphasize the importance of getting the group involved, because I think that's what makes it a success. You know, we can pick topics. It can be a chapter of the PMBOK, or it could be a specific item that somebody knows they need to study up on. In our group, we had one person do a presentation on input tools, technique, and output, and, you know, remembering them and you know, just a general session on that, because that's the area they felt that they needed to improve in. And, you know, in Dana's presentation today, he talked a lot about OPAs and E and the environmental factors, and somebody else did a presentation on those and the difference between them and that. So it doesn't always have to be a chapter. You know, it could be really focused on one given area. And, you know, for every lesson that you attend or work on, you know, you'll pick up those couple ideas, those couple key concepts that are going to help you pass this exam. Okay, I'm off my soapbox.
Yeah, David, I think that what we should do is why don't we try to compose between the two of us an email that gives the details of this, what our thoughts are, and we'll send it out to the group and we'll see what kind of response we have. Again, it won't happen unless we have volunteers. And up until now, I think everybody can agree that David, over the past almost 2 years, and now recently Dana also being involved in volunteering their time, it takes a lot of time to do this. And when you share it between a group of people, it becomes a way of distributing the work. And this is also a good opportunity for a couple of leaders to get involved and be mentored through this process and get some experience under their belt, some real PM experience by leading the group. So there's benefits all around.
And for anybody in the job market, it's a huge thing to be able to put in your resume that you involved in a group like this, and, you know, one of the leaders in a group like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to throw that out there, too.
Eric, you can count on me. This is Joe.
Oh, great, Joe.
Thanks,
so we already
Joe.
Got one volunteer.
Does anybody else want to volunteer while we're on the line?
Let's do it while it's cheap.
Hey, Henry, David, this is Bart Zoni. As you know,
hey, Bart, how are you doing, Bart?
Bart.
I'm doing wonderful, and it was a great presentation tonight, I might say, Dana.
Thanks,
Yeah, I learned a lot. I'm part of the Parsippany study group, but I'm also taking my formal training at AV Tech in South Plainfield, and I've been mentioning to the people in the class, there's about 12 or 13 of us, about PM Lessons Learned, and they should, you know, join and listen in and all that kind of thing. I didn't really follow up on how many people actually might have, but also talking about the Parsippany study group, and people are saying, well, gee, can we? We're far away from there. You know, some people are south of South Plainfield and, you know, that kind of thing. That's too far to travel. Maybe we can join and start another group or something. So basically what I'm thinking is I want to, like, kind of let them know about this virtual study group, and some of those might be very interested in doing this. And I just was wondering, you said you're going to write up some kind of a email or something to explain the concept or look for interest or whatever to answer from?
Yeah, we'll do that, Bart. And listen, even if they decide that they want to start a physical study group and they just want I'll volunteer my time to come and help them, you know, at the first meeting and help them get organized like we did in Parsippany or something. So, you know, you feel free to offer that as well. But we'd love to have them in the virtual group as well, because, like you say, sometimes, you know, there might be a few people even in that group that's too far away. So,
yeah,
and Henry and I will put the email together and we'll send it out. I'll send it out both to the library group and this group. So,
and we probably all, this is Dana. We probably also want to make sure that folks respond with their interest in just being part of the group. and maybe not being a facilitator or the project manager, but you're not going to be able to do too much without members in the group. So the great extent that those folks in New Jersey can participate. We heard people from Sioux Falls, South Dakota on this call, and Minnesota, I think, was another one on this call. You know, there's plenty of we need to make sure that we have enough of an audience, if you will, to get things started. And maybe, if we're lucky, we'll have enough of an audience that we need more than one group.
That's absolutely true. Actually, I'm kind of worried about that, Dana. In the past, just on this call alone, you know, you mentioned places here in the U.S., but just so that everybody knows, in the past, we've had people from New Zealand. Somebody actually got their certification listening to some of our calls and wrote us a nice email saying how beneficial the calls were for them. We've had people from Japan and India all dial into this call. So
yeah, being the fact it starts at 9 p.m. Eastern time, that's a perfect earlier morning time for those Asia-Pacific folks, and it's probably why we don't see too many people from Europe on this call as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So. Okay. Henry, do you have any other comments before I stop the recording?
No, I don't think so, David, other than thank you very much for everybody that's participated in this call. And thank you especially to David for his leadership and to Dana for his presentation skills and be willing to volunteer their time to give back to the project management profession and give back to people that haven't yet attained their certification so that they might be able to study and do better. I recommend to all of you that you go back and look at the archives on our site, because there's archives of our conference calls in the past that cover all these different topics of the PMBOK, and they're all available for free.
Okay, I'm going to stop the recording.
That sure was a lot of helpful information, wasn't it? Please join us for a future conference call. We currently have several calls a month. Join our Yahoo group for more information about our calls and information to further your project management career. Membership is free. Details are at pmlessonslearned.com. We hope you'll continue to listen in to our podcasts and tell others about our podcasts and our group. pmlessonslearned.com. We're all about project managers helping project managers. And until next time, keep on learning.
This has been a PM Lessons Learned podcast. Project Managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Come join our group. Visit our website at pmlessonslearned.com. Till next time, keep on learning.